Welcome back to the Gift of Gaming podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and good night, depending on where and when you're listening to the Gift of Gaming podcast. We're about to enter spooky season. October is right around the corner, but before we get there, let's look back on everything that happened in September in video game news. What's up? It's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the console-hating, PC-playing, lore-seeking, full-time Canadian himself, Chris Robbins. Chris, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's just you and me this week. We're without the artist formerly known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself. He's not with us today. He's very busy doing live things. So it's just you and me to cover September news. And it was a pretty big one.
A lot of just kind of like fuck you news, which was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it's
not as much happy stuff as I'd like to see.
Yeah, but no news is good news is the general rule. So yeah. I tend to, when these episodes come around, I'm always like, oh, what are their
We've had some things. Where we're just like, yeah, fuck yeah.
I've got a good. Well, I mean, for me personally, the last one on our episode we're going to run through is a kind of a feel good one for me. Do you know what I mean? I like that one. Rest of it, you know, it's what it is, I suppose. Yeah. But actually, one of the things I wanted to ask you was kind of like, what games are you excited to, or is there anything that you're excited about coming out soon to play? But I thought I'd go through the state of play in September, because that had a couple of announcements from that. So I might run through that. We can go through what's up and coming to see if there's anything there that tickles your fancy.
Or if the anything state of play. Yeah, okay. I didn't watch it live, but I watched like the recaps and stuff.
Yeah. I think I was the same. I caught up to it later because I think it was on quite late at night and I missed it or something. But so this is coming from the PlayStation blog by Gillan McAllister. So I'm just going to run through literally everything that was announced in the release dates and stop me on anything that you're keen to break down, Chris. But in no particular order.
You're really throwing me in the deep end with written articles. We're not going to grease the wheels.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through this list because it has a couple of announcements and things like that, and then we can grease the wheels because I wanted this to give us some ideas of what's up and coming. I'm interested to see what games you might be excited about, because usually we always talk about like, oh, what are you playing right now? But sometimes it's only been a week and people are still playing the same shit. So I was like, hey, why don't I ask what people are excited about, and we can see what the state of play
changes the formula.
Just keeping it, you know, are you awake now, Chris? You know,
gotta be.
So in no particular order, we got Astrobot DLC, giving new speedrun levels and new bots to rescue.
I haven't played Astrobot myself, but I've always, well, just because I don't own a PlayStation, but I've always liked the idea of Astrobot. And you know me, I love speedrunning. And this is also, it ties into your friends list. So you can kind of see like the leaderboard of who's doing the best among your friends that you have like added on your personal account, which brings me back to the days of Geometry Wars, where me and my friends all had Xbox 360s. And we had this rule in Geometry Wars where you weren't allowed, if you had the high score, you weren't allowed to play that game mode anymore.
We'd
stumble home from the bar at like 3 a.m, just drunk, look at the boot on the Xbox and see that like Jet had beaten our score, and just like, nope.
I know what I'm doing when I get home. Yeah. Astrobot's been fantastic. I am on the very, so I've done all the trophies. I just have to do this last. I saved all the robots, and when you do that, you unlock kind of like the end game level, and it's essentially kind of like a speed run. Like once you start, you can't stop essentially because the map disappears behind you. It's given me loads of trouble in the greatest way. Like it's such a good challenge, and I'm waiting to finish that to get my platinum trophy. Great game. I can't wait for the DLC as well. Just what a
is
treat.
Is it free DLC? Because it's just speedrunning modes, right?
I'd assume so. I think it'd be pretty bad of them to, because they said new speedrun levels. I don't know if there's that many. And they said there's 10 new bots to rescue. Like there's, you know, in some levels, you rescue 7 bots in a single level. A level takes 15 minutes. So it'd be pretty cheap if they, but Sony's on a run of late in terms of, you know, overpriced on things. So we'll wait and see. After that, we got Ghost of Yotai out in 2025. That was the end thing for the state of play, but that looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what I was looking at when I saw it. Like, this is a new standalone game, right? This isn't like
DLC it's based like 200 years plus after Jin's story from the original Ghost of Tsushima. Okay.
So Ghost of is just a franchise now?
I guess, Ghost of. And I think they said in the, I think in the blog post or something like that, they had mentioned that they're trying to do a couple of other bits and pieces, other mediums as well. So I think there's a movie in the works possibly as well, probably an animated TV show, those kind of things. So they're kind of make it the Ghost of will be a big franchisable work by PlayStation Studios or whatever.
Always nice to see new IPs, and people seem to really like the Ghost of Tsushima. I haven't played it myself. I watched Craig play it a bit. Open world fatigue, I don't think it would really be for me, but I did like what I saw, especially the kind of very strong Tenchu vibes.
Yeah, it's on my list. I played through, I got it like maybe 14-15 hours in, and I had just come off my Platinum for Horizon, and I was like, open world, I can't do this anymore. But I've had a real nice time with Astrobot and Space Marines. I'm like, oh, I've kind of left open worlds for a while now. It's been a couple of months, so I think I'll go back and try and finish it, because I watched that trailer for Ghost of Yotai and I was like, that looks pretty cool. Speaking of Horizon, we got the Horizon Zero Dawn remastered. That's right, a brand new remaster from a 2017 game, releasing on the 31st of October, and the upgrade is only going to cost a tenner, which is something. At least I think if you own the game, I'm sure you're probably have to pay full price if
yeah definitely.
But I looked at that and was like, okay, you know, will I pay a tenner? Maybe. I've already platinumed the game, so.
The amount of, like, remastering they did to it is probably not even worth a tenner. Like, it literally just came out in 2017. They're already remastering this, like, yet they're sitting on Bloodborne.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, these are the worst decisions I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You want to make millions and millions of dollars. You don't even have to remaster Bloodborne. Just re-release it. Just make it playable on PC or PS5 and
we'll play it.
Yeah, charge whatever the fuck you want.
It's weird. It's like there's a certain things, because one of the big rumors was that loads of people were kind of scared of was that Days Gone was going to get announced as a remaster as well, and everyone was like, that game wasn't a great game. I don't know why we'd be remastering Days Gone or whatever else. So I'm glad it was Horizon instead of that, but I don't think either were a good choice. Do you know what I mean?
Which one was Days Gone?
That's the guy with on the motorbike and the zombies, the zombie hordes. You know, you fought like, you know, hundreds of zombies at go, and there was a student in the
that
motorbike.
That wasn't good?
I tried to give that a go, I would say, like 3 months ago. I was like, you know what, I should maybe give like Days Gone. I played 3 hours. I was like, nah, not for me. I think it seems older than it is, maybe, in the sense that like the AI, you know, the zombies and stuff that you're playing against, there's so few models. Like, they all look the exact same. So I was like, this kind of feels a bit,
gotcha.
A bit cheapy or something.
I just dealt with that recently because I've been on a bit of a Warhammer kick, and I bought a new CPU and it came with Space Marine 2. I was like, well, fuck, maybe I should play the first one because I already had it in my library.
Nice.
I've been sitting
nice.
On it for a while. Played through that and it was like very much the same. Like, you're just fighting the orcs for the most part. And it's just the same characters like or models recycled over. It got pretty samey, but I mean, it's also Space Marine. So,
yeah.
Or the Warhammer universe, which I love. So
the Space Marines 2, you're in for a treat. Myself and I finished that last week, and it was
I'm looking forward
such
to
a
that.
Joy. Then we got the Horizon LEGO Adventure. I think they gave it was like now available for pre-order. It was the big announcement on November, released on November 14th. After that, we touched upon the PlayStation 5 Pro and an update on all of the upgraded games.
This is such a big fucking insult, man. I can't believe. And man,
I pre-ordered mine. Yeah, I was up. I tried to get. I was up to try and get the 30th edition anniversary Pro bundle. It ended up going on for like I think it was €1,099. But when you look at the actual bundle, I mean, the Pro cost itself is too much. But the deal in terms of, I think it was. It matched exactly, or was a little bit less than if you bought all those things together normally outside of it being the 30th edition, 30th anniversary
edition.
Yeah, but
doesn't it come with that, they have that super controller.
The DualSense Edge, which I've no.
Ridiculous. Yeah. You don't need.
250 quid or 240 quid.
You don't need
for
customizable thumbsticks and like.
For me to
back
play
buttons could be all
Civilization
right.
7 or whatever.
Yeah, back buttons could be all right if you're like super sweating a game and you want some sort of macro, but like.
And I'm not that kind of gamer, you know.
Exactly.
The competitive controllers have never been my thing. But I logged on online for that when I was in the queue. I'd set up an address on like, you know, on post, there's this thing called Address Pal. So it gave me like a UK address that I could use. So I could go to PlayStation Direct, you know, UK and try and order from there. And it was done in a way that I think kind of cut out some of the bot issue that they have the PlayStation 5, but I think it still suffered. But you just popped in a waiting room, and once it opened, it just randomly put you into a spot in the queue, which I kind of think minimized the bot effect. But when it put me into the queue, I was sitting there, and I was like, I was working away as well. I was, you know, still working. I was like, I have the laptop on beside me, being like, oh, randomly, maybe this is the time that I'll be like fifth or sixth in the queue. Because when if I was one of those lucky people, and it put me in, and it was like your wait time in the queue was like 1 hour, 10 minutes. And I was like, well, they're all going to be gone. And lo and behold, I waited and I got in and everything was gone. But I still decided then to go for the PS5 Pro, which I know, and this is, I'll put my hand up, it's overpriced and Sony are pulling the rug out.
Overpriced if you already own a PS5 or like a PC or something. If you're going in to upgrade like your PS4,
It's probably not
that bad. They haven't released the real full spec, so I haven't done been able to do a true comparison to like how much would it cost to build like a PC.
So some guy, I was on a Reddit thread and some guy put up on it like these Excel spreadsheets for how much it would cost to try and build like a PC. It's like, if you want a PC with a mouse and keyboard, you want a PC with this like customizable bits, here's everything you can get for this price. And I don't know much about PCs. And that's the thing as well, is like, I get it. I get that you could get yourself a good PC for all those prices. But I'm all about, especially, I'm a PlayStation guy through and through. And it's the exclusives and it's day one. And I want to play the Horizons. Yeah, okay. I want to play the Final Fantasies. And the moment, what sold me, Chris, was that Digital Foundry did a tech demo on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And the game looks unbelievable. And I still have to do my hard playthrough of that and get ready for, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 3. And I'm like, the pro is going to be, because the thing about it is, there's one lesson I've learned, Chris, is that me getting the PlayStation 5 on day one meant very little in terms of next generation gaming, because we didn't really get a whole lot for the PS5 when it came out.
Well, so you could get the odd
couple thing of things since, but not an amazing list. So I think what I've learned from that is when the PS6 comes out, I won't be getting it day one until such a time whereby I can't play the games I want to play unless I have a PS6. So like my pro, when I get it, and hopefully I do get it and arrives, it's all fine, it'll be a case that I'll have this for the next 6 years until the PS6 becomes the thing that I need to buy, as opposed to the thing that I want to buy day one. Yeah. Which I learned my lesson from that.
Yeah, fair enough. I actually ended up, because we were arguing about the prices over the consoles, mm-hmm. In our personal chat for this podcast, and I ended up on Smith's Toys, and I noticed that the 30th anniversary edition controllers were still available for pre-order. And I've always liked the PlayStation controllers, and I wanted to. Well, I don't have much experience with the PS5. What is it? DualSense? Yep. What is it called? Yeah, not much experience with that, but I do want to experience the haptic triggers.
The haptic—it's one of my favorite controllers ever. Is the PS5?
And the other thing is, I'm always stressing about not having a PlayStation because for some reason the Bluetooth just is better across the board than every other controller
to connect
out there.
To PC? Yeah.
I mean, you've seen me deal with the Bluetooth. It's always just better with the PlayStation controllers. And I mean, it just, the 30th anniversary
looks so good.
I
was like,
you know what? I don't feel bad about buying a controller.
No, and I wish I had it in the end. So when I went on to PlayStation Direct UK and everything was gone and there was nothing, I could buy the Slim bundle. Do you know what I mean? But I was like, I'm not going to buy, like, I want the Pro, I'm not going to buy a Slim and this whole thing. And because the Slim bundle is actually more expensive. If you put all those pieces together, normally the bundle for this 30th anniversary was 60 or 70 quid, I think, give or take. They're more expensive than if you bought them all individually, where I was like, don't think I'll do that. But I wanted to get the controller, and I just never thought of Smiths. I just didn't think Smiths would be getting this shit in, because everyone was like, oh, limited edition, blah, blah, blah. And I remember being on Reddit and people being like, oh, it's just gone up on Smiths, the bundle. And I went on again. But too late by the time.
Yeah, everything was gone. Yeah.
So some guy had contacted Smiths here in Ireland. Smiths got 30 copies of the Pro bundle for a population of, I don't know how many gamers would be in Ireland, but Smiths Ireland. So Ireland got 30 copies of the 12,300 PlayStation 30th anniversary. So I was like, wow, I was never going to get one, like, you know, but it was worth a try. But that was cool. They updated updated the list of games that are playable or have been upgraded for the PlayStation 5 Pro. And there's a couple of things there that I want to give a shot on. So that was good. Then they announced the PS5 Chroma Collection, 3 new PlayStation 5 colors, pearl, indigo, and teal. None of them do it for me.
Yeah, especially right beside the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, all looks crap. Like, We got the Alan Wake 2 DLC, the Lake House, which
Spoopy.
Is yeah, a new location. It's being released next month. They haven't given a date. Then we got Arc Age, which was a they showcased an online action RPG. And I don't know if you can remember what this one looked like, but it's a, you know, obviously multiplayer kind of, I guess action RPG, but it looked unbelievably good.
Oh, looked very MMO-ish, right?
There was like guys playing like barbarians and a wizard fella and this other kind of thief woman. Looked really good. Yeah. I was kind of, once I saw that, I was like, I could keep an eye on this one anyway. The Dragon Age The Veilguard, a really long gameplay trailer releasing October 31st.
It's still getting shredded, and I thought it looked fun.
I thought it looked fun. I mean, I don't know what people want nowadays, really, and I thought it looked okay. I saw someone played one of the content creators I watch. He played like the opening section, whenever they allowed people to play. I was like, looks like it could be pretty.
Yeah, I don't even know what people are even angry about it about, like art style or something is different. Or?
Yeah, it is. No, it's the art style. I would say is very different. I think it seems a bit more cartoony, but like. Different iteration, I'd be into that. Then we got Dynasty Warriors Origins, a release date reveal for January 17th. Yeah, I thought
of you immediately.
I am so pumped. Also, by the way, that one has been upgraded for the PS5 Pro, so I'll be able to play Dynasty Warriors.
So you can render 2,000 more people on the screen.
But it looks really good. My only thing that I'm sad about Dynasty Warriors Origins was that in every previous Dynasty Warriors game, you chose to play as one of the heroes from any of the kingdoms that we're fighting. But yeah. I think this game is giving you a singular person to play through the campaign.
Oh, this is like a story mode?
Yeah, and I think I watched a gameplay trailer where...
Well, Origin. I mean,
I guess. But in the gameplay trailer, I think certain of the famous fighters like Guan Yu or Xia Hudun, they'll come in as... I think you can take control of them in certain moments in battles. And I was like, that's not what I would be mad about, but we'll see.
My experience with Dynasty Warriors, I only played one game. I can't remember which one it was. But I remember, like, there was a huge list of people you could select, but, like, it didn't matter. they all played the same.
A lot of them did. And a lot of them were, like, kind of, like, similar model things. When you went to it, there was a create your character, I think, in Dynasty Warriors 5, and you realized how limited the moveset was. Like, you could just create any one of the characters. Like, I was like, oh, okay. So there's just very few movesets. But, yeah, I'm interested to see. I think it looks as good as it could do for a W-Force game. I wasn't expecting it to be groundbreaking or anything like that, but looks great. We've got Phantasian Neo Dimension, which is from the creator of Final Fantasy. That new game is releasing December 5th. Not really my thing, but we'll see. Fear the Spotlight launches on October 22nd. That's from that indie group, I think Cozy Places or Cozy Games or something like that they're called. That one looks good.
And then something Spotlight?
Fear the Spotlight.
Oh, yeah. You're like a doll running around.
Yeah, graphically, it looks kind of like, again, I think it's a very small... team or whatever else, so it has a bit of an indie look about it.
There was a really cool, like, claymation one.
That one is known as the Midnight Walk. That one.
Okay, we haven't reached that one yet.
No,
okay.
But that one looked, that one looked very good. Fortnite, we got a split screen mode for the Lego Fortnite and a new Fortnite DualSense. It doesn't interest me whatsoever. Fortnite.
I feel like we're at a point that like somebody on this podcast has to play Fortnite. Like, it's just too big, and it's a game launcher in itself.
One
now.
Of us needs to go and actually investigate. Bite I mean, I, bullet, I, I played, me and Colin played it for a long time back when it first released, but we got overtaken by, in terms of our ability, I'd go on and stopped winning. You know, there was a time where me and Colin stopped winning games, and it became just this thing where we just weren't
cracked ass fucking 13-year-olds fueled on Rockstar and Monster shit.
Just wrecking us all day long. Yeah. We got Hell Is Us, a gameplay reveal for this action-adventure game. I like the concept. It gives you no help whatsoever. There's no map. There's no icon of where to go next. The whole point is to talk to NPCs to give you sort of like, they might give you hints as to
Dark Souls.
Where to go. Yeah. But I think it's a bit more... I don't know if it's as linear as Dark Souls. I think it's looked like it was maybe a bit more open. But I love that idea that you get no help whatsoever. We got Hitman, World of Assassination.
This is a VR one, right?
Yeah. And
interesting, actually. Valve just released for Steam some sort of software for PSVR. So your PlayStation VR can now interface with Steam and shit.
Very cool.
Not entirely proprietary to your PlayStation now. You can use it on the PC with Steam.
If you had a library of stuff, that'd be pretty sweet, I guess, on Steam VR. Yeah, cool. Then we got Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver 1 and 2 remaster announcements for December 10th. Andrew was delighted with that. I was delighted for him. It's just a pity it wasn't. I thought they might have...
Why even bother remastering it? Like, it looked... I'm glad it's coming out again, but like the level of polish it got is just like, why do anything at all?
Yeah, it just looks brighter, which is kind of defeats the purpose of what the mood of the game was, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, just make it playable. Don't touch any of the graphics. Yeah. That's fine.
I love that game. I'm looking forward to seeing. I'll wait and see reviews and stuff like that, but I loved that when it was back in the day. We got Lunar Remaster Collection, remastered after 25 years, coming spring 2025. Yeah.
Silver Star Story. I completely forgot about that fucking game even exists. I was obsessed with it, and it used to come with these like DVDs for this like commentary behind the scenes making the game, and just like almost like anime cutscenes and stuff.
Because the game has, I think, in the actual game itself, which is what it was famous for back in the day, was that there was with the main characters
FMVs and stuff, and it was fantastic.
But 25 years ago would have been pretty.
It was hard though. It was one of those games. Did you ever play like the Star Ocean, the earlier ones?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Where just like there's one point where you just do zero damage to an enemy, and then you just have to break that plateau, and then now you can do damage.
Yeah.
It was very much like that. Like it was very hard. And I was a kid, I didn't understand shit, so I was just grinding until I was too powerful.
Yeah, I'm like, listen, that's the thing. I'm all about curation and saving games and stuff like that, so it coming out. I just hope that these things are, you know, the collection stuff like that come out at a reasonable price. I mean, I don't know what kind of level of touch-up it's gotten, but
50 euro or whatever on the Marvel vs. Capcom collection.
Nice.
I didn't feel good about the price, but I was like, nah.
But the one thing I will say about that is that that's the only way to play now because it was pulled.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, still, 50 quid is expensive, but there's what, six games in that collection? I don't even play one of them really myself, but.
Oh, God, I couldn't tell you. I think it's six.
Yeah, there's a decent few decent games.
Maybe eight, I don't know.
But Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is all I'd be.
Yeah, exactly. That's what most people would play. I mean, there's like the Punisher in there. He's like, I'm
not going to play that. That's a pretty fucking old game. Like, we got Metro Awakening VR for November 7th. Monster Hunter Wild got a release date trailer, February 28th. Very excited for that.
Way sooner than I thought it would be.
Well, myself and Craig were debating that it would probably be March because they said it was going to be this fiscal year, which would be that it'd have to be released before the end of March. And World and Iceborne both came out in March. So we just assumed it would have been a March release, which is essentially, I guess, end of February. Stellar Blade, Photo Mode, and a Nier crossover. It does nothing for me. I never played that game. Know nothing about it. But congratulations, Stellar Blade fans who won a Photo Mode.
Stellar Blade came out of nowhere and just like became super popular.
Then we got The Midnight Walk for PS5 and PSVR 2 for spring 2025, the Dark Fantasy Claymation game. That looks really cool.
That looks really nice idea. Fucking awesome. Yeah. I really like that.
It's a pity it's so far away because it looks kind of spooky. And when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, here's another Halloween game I could look into, but next year. But that's one to keep an eye on.
You know what comes out in time for Halloween this year? Silent Hill 2, the remaster.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel. I don't know if I like how that looks, to be honest, in terms of graphically.
I'm sure it'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it looks better than Silent Hill 2, but I don't know if it looks as well as I wanted it to. Are you going to pick that up, do you reckon, Silent Hill?
Not on release. No, that's still a game.
Yeah. You don't do that.
Yeah.
You're smart. Then we got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, got Radical Reptiles Update, which is some new playable characters. Great game. I recommend that.
And Mona Lisa. Got two characters.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So that one's, I mean, I love that game playing through that. That's well worth a shout. Looks great. Then we got the Sonic X Shadow Generations, a DLC tied to the upcoming movie releasing December 12th.
Ooh, fuck Shadow.
Oh, yeah, you don't like Shadow. So hang on, I can't remember. Did you see the Sonic movies, 1 and 2?
Yep. Oh, yeah, big fan.
And are you not interested in 3 now because Sonic or because Shadow's there?
I'll watch it because it's Sonic, but like, yeah, at one point.
Keanu Reeves, man. You know the way he loves being game pins now?
They can't force me to like this character just by using fucking characters
that I love. Like, yeah. I just thought that was kind of cool that they're actually releasing the game stuff to coincide with the movie, so good on them. Then we got Towers of Agashba, which is it was a gameplay trailer for this kind of city builder. Early access starts November. Looked okay. Don't know if it'd be my cup of tea, but for those city builders, Sims lovers, it's probably a good shout. And then the last one I'm going to read because it leads on to our very first story, but before we go there, it was Pal World, the open world survival crafter, launches on PS5 as of today, which was the 24th of September.
Okay, so is this the segue into the next news.
Yeah, but before we get on to that, I thought now we can, you know, sit back and you can grease the wheels a little bit. Is there anything on the State of Play list that you're keen on playing, or just in general, is there something that you're excited about? Because we're coming up to, like, you know, we're entering October. Is anything left this year that you're excited to see get released?
I mean, nothing really, you know. No, not really.
Nothing
was, like, overly exciting for me.
I'm trying to think for myself. No.
Wilds. But, I mean, that wasn't news.
Yeah, we all knew that was. I mean, we just news that we have an actual date for it, which is great. I think from nothing that I want to play immediately, but Arc Age is something that I'm going to keep an eye on in terms of that looks like it could be a really fun game. And then of course the Astrobot DLC when that comes out, because I'll play that game till the cows come home. That's a fucking great game. But speaking of PAL World, going to our first proper news story is that Nintendo is suing the creators of PAL World. This comes from games.
Most ridiculous. I knew it was coming. I knew it had to be coming. Like, there's no way Nintendo's going to sit there and just, like,
just watch them do this.
Yeah, and this also made me realize, like, I remember being in school and, like, you'd have to write an essay and the teachers were always like, make sure you don't copyright this. Well, no, blah, blah, blah. And now the fact that, like, Nintendo couldn't sue Power World over copyright. And I was just like, what actually constitutes
copyright? Here's the thing that I find funny about that. Someone put up a thing, because the copyright, when we get into it, they're suing them for patents about gameplay as opposed to copyright for characters. Because there was a game, and I can't remember the name, but I saw the pictures. Someone lined up three pictures. The middle one was Pokemon. The one on the right was Power World. But there was this one that came out in 1988, so prior to Pokemon. And just how similar all these monster characters are from whatever that game was to Pokemon to Power World. I'm like, well, Nintendo can't sue for copyright because they're obviously taking some ideas from this other game that came out like 3 years before them, you know?
Yeah, but okay, so yeah, that's why they dropped the copyright. So, and they went with like, it was patent infringement on game mechanics, which is crazy, because if you think about, like, Breath of the Wild completely ripped off Assassin's Creed with that whole, like, tower system.
And then, do you know what Nintendo tried to do then? They tried to patent the loading screen that they had for Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And I'm like, stop it, Nintendo. Like, I mean, if someone copies that thing, that nice thing where an arrow is moving across your loading screen or whatever else, take it as a compliment. Stop trying to, like, control.
It's just games are so weird. It's so crazy. Just, like, imagine someone patenting the idea of, like, a double jump or just, like,
oh, stop. Where would, like, we be in gaming?
Yeah,
like, you know?
Just leveling up.
But we'll get into it anyway. So this is coming from Dominic Bosnjak from Game Rant. Nintendo's lawsuit against Pocket Pair is unlikely to do any major damage to the PAL World developer, a patent expert told Game Rant. But Pocket Pair still seems to be facing a long and arduous legal battle against Nintendo. Nintendo and the Pokemon Company filed a joint lawsuit against the PAL World developer on September 18th. The complaint, submitted to the Tokyo District Court, alleges that Pocket Pair's hit survival crafting game infringes on a number of their patents. The details of the lawsuit have yet to be made public. Reflecting on this turn of events, veteran patent analyst Florian Muller told Game Rant that he doesn't expect the case to have international consequences. Quote, at most, Nintendo will do some damage in Japan, but probably not outside. End quote. The first of these consequences might have already materialized on September 24th, when PAL World was shadow dropped for the PS5 in 68 countries, but not Japan. A recent tweet from Pocket Pair saw the company acknowledge that the PlayStation version of the game currently lacks a release date for its home market, albeit without any outright statement that Nintendo's lawsuit is the reason for this. Japanese IP attorney Kiyoshi Kirihara has previously pointed to a Nintendo patent for creature capture mechanics as possibly being related to the PAL World lawsuit. Muller told Game Rant that this is a plausible theory, while noting that the case itself won't turn on infringement as much as on validity, because the first thing that will come into question is whether the intellectual property central to litigation is patent eligible. Quote, only because the Japanese Patent Office granted those patents doesn't mean that they couldn't be revoked or narrowed, he explained. Muller noted that talking about potential outcomes of the case will be easier once its details are made public. Quote, let's see when all the specifics are on the table, but it's not like Power World infringes left, right, and center on numerous IPs. They probably infringe on nothing that can withstand a serious court review, end quote. The details of the case are something not even Pocket Pair was notified about in advance, having said as much in its initial response to Nintendo PAL World's lawsuit. Muller said that Nintendo's decision not to give Pocket Pair the courtesy of reviewing the complaint before announcing it publicly is not unusual for a company that's on a warpath and wants to come across as hostile. Patent disputes in Japan commonly take between 12 and 18 months to reach a first instance verdict, assuming they aren't settled beforehand. Muller believes that Nintendo may be more interested in pursuing its complaint to completion rather than prioritizing damages. He said as much in a recent tweet, which also saw him predict that this case is more likely to last 5 years than to be settled during the first. Well, Chris?
Fucking unbelievable. The best, like, it won't even hurt this company just because they could just change that ball mechanic and then just have the character throw, like, dollar bills. And then, like, that's what catches the animals.
But the thing that bothers me about this is that Powerball came out, and it's been out for, I don't know how long now, a year? It's been out a year, just under, maybe. And nothing from, and we were all watching being like, how the fuck is Nintendo and Game Freak and Pokemon not coming after these guys? But it's not until the world realized that Pocket Pair was making bank, absolute bank off of Power World. More money than they
knew.
I
want them to change the company name to Sega Do. Sega Do with Nintendo.
Oh, man. It's just because they, you know, and that's what I love about that quote, was that they actually came out and said, we don't know what to do with all the money that we're making here. In terms of, I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a nice complaint. But it's weird that the, you know, this stuff has only come out. But I say that. The belief is that Nintendo aren't chasing damages. They're chasing a protection of their patent, which I just think is mad. They should need to stop putting patents on video game mechanics.
Game mechanics is just ridiculous.
It's just anti-creativity.
I looked a bit more into it because I didn't think that, like I thought these always failed. But apparently, I think Warner Brothers patented the Nemesis system from Shadows of Mordor. Do you remember the Nemesis system?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fucking cool mechanic. It's no one else can use it. Seen it.
Yeah. It's devastating, man. And, like, you know, what are you patenting for? Like, your game, if it's good, it's successful, great, you've done it, and use it in the next game or whatever else. But me as a developer, if I saw someone trying to copy what I was doing in my video game, I'd take it as the height of a compliment that it's like, hey, you created a really nice thing here.
And that's just how we progress as, like, and it's not just video games. It's just
art.
Movies and art and just, like, you know, architecture, engineering. We take somebody else's idea and we improve on it. Or maybe we don't improve on it, but we try to innovate something.
Yeah. Not with Nintendo. Sticking in the dark ages.
Yeah.
It's a pity. But we'll see. We'll see. I would like to see them. That's what is interesting.
Greedy
is that if they
fucking
can't.
Corporations, yeah, man.
If they can't prove it or put it through put through their case properly, it looks like the patent office could revoke or narrow their patent, Nintendo that has. So they'll have no way to argue this in the future, which we can all get on with our lives then. Because throwing something at something to catch it is. Well, maybe that is really Pokemon. Anybody do that before Pokemon? You throw something at something to catch it? A cage?
I don't know. A net, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go on to our next story. We covered this one a while back, you, me, and Luke, when Unity fucked shit up for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
backtracking.
Yeah, this is Unity revokes its runtime fee. It's coming from Nicole Carpenter of Polygon. A year ago, Unity Technologies created a huge problem for itself and the developers who use its game engine. It introduced a near universally hated new fee tied to a developer's game installs. While Unity argued its fee change would impact only developers with, quote, successful games, end quote, that had lots of revenue, Unity users didn't see it that way. For those developers, it was a major risk that could cause financial ruin. The company ended up walking back parts of the runtime fee change by September 22nd last year, assuming that was a small improvement for some developers. Now Unity is fully revoking the malign fee, effective immediately. The company posted its website on Thursday. Quote, I've been able to connect with many of you over the last 3 months, and I've heard time and time again that you want a strong Unity and understand that price increases are a necessary part of what enables us to invest in moving gaming forward, new CEO Matthew Broomberg wrote. But those increases needn't come in a novel and controversial new form, end quote. Broomberg took over the helm from interim CEO Jim Whitehurst, who took on the role after former CEO John Riccitiello stepped down weeks after the runtime fee disaster. Unity will now use a, quote, seat-based subscription model for all its gaming customers, it said, including companies that are using Unity 6. Unity 6 is the newest version of the engine with the runtime fee still applied. Seat-based subscription models typically calculate price based off the number of people at a company who use it. Here's Unity's plan straight from its news release. Unity said it'll be making changes to that subscription plan in 2025, including on its pricing, and it said it will revisit pricing each year. On social media, developers have praised Unity for finally fully adjusting its pricing model. InnerSlot said, quote, finally, for the record, InnerSlot has already migrated our next game from Unity. We found a lot of speed and power in a custom platform atop a minimal engine. That said, Among Us no longer has to worry about upgrading for next-gen consoles. Thanks for that, Unity. Many others have expressed similar sentiment, including Go.creator Iwan Linetsky, quote, happy that many Unity users now no longer have to feel forced to move to Godot due to this, he wrote, hoping that if they move, it's because they really like our work and mission instead. Still, plenty of developers, including those supporting the move, lament how long it took Unity to make this decision.
Oh, God. Godot got much bigger because of this. And the fact that he was just like, oh, I'm glad, you know, Unity pulled your socks up. I bet you he's just like... taking please the stay. High ground inside. He's
please
like,
stay.
Yeah, you fucking
please don't
idiots.
Leave me. Yeah.
And I think they will stay because, like, Godot or Godot, I don't know how it's actually
pronounced. No, I thought, I was like, is this like Gal Gadot or is this Godot? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, to be honest, myself. But I'm pretty sure that one is true open source. So it'll just, you just have to say you built it on this engine. And there is no fees at all. Which,
unbelievable. In the fallout from the debacle, several game engines rose to meet demand for new options, including open source, free engine, Godot, or Godot, which reportedly, quote, doubled its user base after the Unity change had developers looking elsewhere, according to Gamefile. Another engine, GameMaker, made its engine free for all non-commercial use. It also adjusted its PC commercial license to a one-time fee. Godot in particular...
I love how these companies see what Unity, which used to be the biggest, has done, and they're like, let's do the... opposite.
That's not good news. Yeah, what's happened over there? Like, that house is really on fire. Like, you know, Godot in particular recently received a boost in investment, $15 million. Excuse me, in December 2023 to scale up the engine. Meanwhile, Unity marked 2023 by laying off more than 1,100 people throughout the year, closing several offices and terminating a deal with Peter Jackson's Weta FX. In January, Unity made another round of cuts, laying off more than 1,800 people in what was called a company reset. In 2023, Unity made $2.1 billion in revenue, but was not profitable, reporting a net loss of $826.3 million, a number that is down from previous years. The company has never turned a profit, but former interim CEO Whitehurst told Game Developer in April that he was, quote, getting the company to a size where we are proudly profitable. That's it. It's Unity trying to fix its shit. I mean, I don't know how they could have made that worse, because I remember sitting here with like the three of us talking about it, and we couldn't even make sense,
like, because what they were claiming was just so bonkers. They're just like, surely we're missing something here. They couldn't think that this is a good idea.
And people doing the maths were like, if my game is successful, I might owe Unity money instead of making anything myself.
If anyone has any sort of malicious intent, they could cost me money by just downloading it
constantly
over and over again.
And get bots in on that, like, you know, because that's the thing as well, that's the thing that we or that I hate about the video game industry, is how much vitriol there is over stuff like that. So if people don't like something, they're gonna go ham about it. Like Ghost of Yotai, people were going mad because it's a female protagonist, and I'm like, oh yeah, my god.
I try to look into that, and I found more news about people complaining about I found more news about people complaining that there's a female lead.
Oh, good.
But I didn't find anyone like actually complaining about the female lead. I was just like, I don't know. And there was more noise surrounding
a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I'm sure it was out there, and I did come across some, but I found more people complaining about those people than
good. That's what I like
the
to
initial
hear,
complainment.
You know? Yeah. Because I mean, you know, I didn't hear anybody complaining when the protagonist of Stellar Blade was, you know,
just all boobs and ass.
No one was like giving out about that, Chris.
The whole
like,
point
you know
of
mean?
The game. Well, yeah, there was actually.
Was there?
Yeah. It's the other side of that. The spectrum.
Oh, sorry. No. Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. People weren't complaining about it being. Yeah. No. I know. Of course, there was. Yeah. Other legitimate reasons. Our next one is one that I still can't make sense of, and we were talking about it last month. The Annapurna team walkout. This is coming from Ted Litchfield, a PC gamer. Following the shocking mass resignation of publisher Annapurna Interactive's entire 25-person staff, a new report from IGN has provided more details about the games division's dispute with its parent company, Annapurna Pictures, and its billionaire owner, Megan Ellison. Anonymous former employees shared concerns about the interactive division's future under Annapurna Pictures and claimed that Ellison refused to continue working with them on an agreement to spin off the division. Spokespeople for the parent company claimed that the division's leader failed to respond to their efforts to move the process forward. Annapurna Interactive was founded as a gaming-focused subsidiary of Ellison's Annapurna Pictures in 2016, tapping veteran gaming talent including former Sony employees Nathan Gary and Hector Sanchez. After a run of producing successful films like The Master, Her, and Zero Dark Thirty, Annapurna Pictures began to struggle financially in the late 2010s. The interactive studio, meanwhile, enjoyed continued success with games like Stray, Outer Wilds, and Neon White. Gary was named president of Annapurna Pictures overall in 2021, but a source that spoke to IGN alleges his focus remained on the gaming side of the company. After having remained hands-off at Annapurna for several years following its late 2010 struggles, IGN reports that Ellison initiated a leadership shakeup in March with conflicting accounts as to what precisely happened in the interactive division. Anonymous former members claim that Nathan Gary was fired, while Annapurna spokesperson says he resigned in response to other staff changes, as well as his effective demotion from being the head of Annapurna overall to once again just leading Annapurna Interactive. At this point, talks began between Gary and Ellison to spin Annapurna Interactive off into a more independent, but still financially tied to Annapurna Pictures, publisher called Verset. While negotiations moved forward, IGN sources were disturbed by some of Ellison's decisions and changes. Namely, Annapurna rehired founding Interactive executive Hector Sanchez as, quote, president of Interactive and New Media within Annapurna Pictures, independent of and arguably in competition with the established Interactive division. Annapurna Interactive employees said they were blindsided by Annapurna Pictures' publishing agreement with Remedy on Control 2, a partnership negotiated by Sanchez, with those employees only finding out about Remedy deal the same day as it was publicly announced. Annapurna spokespeople argued to IGN that the company always viewed Interactive Verset as an indie AA-focused initiative, with Annapurna Pictures moving into the AAA space with Sanchez at the helm. IGN sources from the Interactive division and Annapurna spokespeople offer conflicting accounts of the final breakdown of negotiations. Annapurna claims that Nathan Gray failed to respond after the company agreed to the outline of a deal earlier this year, and any implication, or quote, any implication Annapurna was backtracking on the deal is false, a company spokesperson said. We agreed to high-level deal terms and signed a term sheet in early April, which makes it all the more surprising that we never got a response. IGN sources dispute that narrative, alleged that Ellison refused to negotiate while taking a more direct role in managing Annapurna Interactive in that time, and said that they gave 2 weeks' notice ahead of their September 6th mass resignation, a notice period Annapurna did not seem to use to either negotiate further or warn its partner developers of the upcoming disruption. Reading that article for the second time or third time now, it actually looks like to me that our owner who decided to step away when things were going bad, Ellison, decided to step back in when things were going good and shake it up with people that they want it, maybe. And that seems to be what people are.
And there's something, no, there's still pieces missing here. Because it is very, it states that the staff left.
Yeah.
And only 25, but they all left.
Yeah.
So this couldn't, of their own volition, right? Like they chose to leave?
Gary, completely confirmed? I think the Gary fella, what's his name? The surname there. Yeah, but yes, Nathan Gary, excuse me, he resigned after some the initial report said that he resigned after there was a breakdown in communication and was like, well, I'm quitting, I'm leaving, and everybody else followed suit in that department. And that's from the what was going to be the offset thing called Verset, because I think it sounds as though Nathan Gary wanted Verset to look after video games because the video game side was successful. And it looks as though Annapurna Pictures, which used to do movies, was stepping in to take AAA games because the video game side of things were successful and was pushing the AA indie games onto Verset and say, no, you guys continue to look after that. So it looks like someone come in and swooped away what Verset wanted to do.
But I mean...
And this is all speculation. I have yeah, zero idea. I have no...
I still don't think, like, if everyone... I don't think everyone would leave for a change in company direction or just pure loyalty to that manager. Cause like you got to think of all those people, like somebody needs that job. Somebody needs that paycheck.
True. And I guess, see, it depends. I remember reading an article and when it first popped out, I remember reading an article saying that people were left quite like, I mean, blindsided by the fact that they are meant to be working on video games. And all of a sudden someone was coming in and changing to be like, oh, you are working on video games, but only the AA ones. Because I think what really killed it, and that's what they're saying, is that really surprised them, was Annapurna Pictures coming out and saying, hey, we've got a deal with Remedy to do Control 2, which I'm assuming Verset, which is Nathan's team, probably thought was something that they would have done. Yeah. But they were like, no, Annapurna Pictures is going to deal with the video game stuff now because it's successful. You guys can do the indie stuff, you know, but we'll do the big things. And I think that sounds like maybe what went down. That's from my reading of this.
The way I'm thinking of it in my head is this person that came back that wanted to shake things up offered like severance packages for people to quit that are too spicy to turn down, maybe, or the entire team got poached to do what it is they wanted to originally, right? But,
or are leaving to do what they wanted to do originally. Yeah, it doesn't sound like anybody was, in terms of the articles up to this point, because this is the latest information we have, but even the articles up to this point, it doesn't sound like they were poached, and it doesn't sound like they were offered any packages to leave. It sounded like they did a walkout, because all of the developers, because there's nobody on that team now, Verset, or it's still called Annapurna Interactive, but they wanted it to be called the thing called Verset. But Verset now has zero staff. There's like 25 listings to fill up the Annapurna Interactive staff to continue working on.
Then something really bad had to have happened for, right? 25 people to quit, like, to the point of, like, we probably shouldn't even speculate, but like, somebody high up in that company probably did something that,
I mean, it's, you know, it's, I mean, again, all speculation, so it's hard to tell. But like, the fact, I think what's the telling part that I find is that Ellison, the person who owns Annapurna, who kind of took a step back when it was failing after the, you know, a few flops in movies, has kind of come in and now flex the thing as a successful again, and flexing in a way that's not being received well by the people who have essentially made it a success.
I think it's just a good old-fashioned walkout.
Sounds it. And like, I mean, Annapurna, like, in terms of, with Annapurna Interactive, which is the video game section that's done Stray and all that kind of stuff, they're great talents. Like, they'll have no problem. Those 25 people have no problem getting a job. Or they could, you know, they could set up for a set and make their own studio and do what they wanted to do, possibly, who knows. But yeah, there's something. Something was promised at some point, and then someone said, actually, no, I've changed my mind. I'm going to do that with my team. You guys look after the dredges of games.
Yeah, and then, you know, these people, like, the fact that they all quit at the same time, they're probably dealing behind the scenes to, like, plan it. They're probably going to pop up with their own company somewhere.
I'd say, again, speculation, I'd say Nathan and Gary went in for these final talks with the owner, Ellison, and had said to people that if we don't get this, I'm going to quit. And everyone else was like, go talk to them. If they don't give us what we want, we'll quit with you. We'll all just walk out and we'll just do it ourselves. Something to that extent, you know. But mad, I mean, because there's, you know, there's a couple of games, I can't remember, is there like a Dune game or something like that that they're meant to be helping publish or something like that, that now has nobody, like, no, but no staff to contact or anything like that. So I'd say there's probably some people, some developers out there being like, hey, who do we call now about our game, you know. Yeah, interesting. I can't wait till that one comes out in terms of actually what went down. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But the final news item for today, Chris, is one that I think is a nice positive one for me in particular. And it's a slow start, but, you know, every little helps. California is forcing stores to admit digital games are licensed, not bought. This is coming from Emma Roth at The Verge. California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a law, AB 2426, to combat disappearing purchases of digital games, movies, music, and ebooks. The legislation will force digital storefronts to tell customers they're just getting a license to use the digital media rather than suggesting they actually own it. But when the law comes into effect next year, it will ban digital storefronts from using terms like buy or purchase unless they inform customers that they're not getting unrestricted access to whatever they're buying. Storefronts will have to tell customers they're getting a license that can be revoked, as well as provide a list of all restrictions that come along with it. Companies that break the rule could be fined for false advertisement. The new law won't apply to stores that offer permanent offline downloads and comes as a direct response to companies like PlayStation and Ubisoft. In April, Ubisoft started deleting The Crew from players' accounts after shutting down servers for the online-only game. And last year, Sony said it would remove purchased Discovery content from users' PlayStation libraries before walking back the move. Quote, as retailers continue to pivot away from selling physical media, the need for consumer protections on the purchase of digital media has become increasingly more important. End quote. This is from California Assembly Member Jackie Irwin, who continued to say in a press release, I thank the governor for signing AB 2426, ensuring that false and deceptive advertisement from sellers of digital media, incorrectly telling consumers they own their purchases, becomes a thing of the past. Forcing storefronts to disclose that they're just selling licenses won't stop them from taking away digital purchases, but it will at least make people more aware that what they're buying can be taken away at any time. I mean, it doesn't change. I mean, I'd rather we own the shit, but at least it's, people know that, hey, this isn't, you know, there's no ownership anymore for this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is putting awareness on the bigger issue, which is nice.
Once enough people know, we can go march in the streets and tell them that I want to own my Burnout 2 Paradise digital copy from whenever that you can't just take away from me, like, you know. But it is mental, because we covered ages ago, sometime last year, I think, the discovery content. In the article, I think it said the money that people had spent buying certain documentaries and series and stuff like that. And it was all just being like, no, we're just removing this. You have no longer. And I thought they if they bought the documentary, that was it. They could watch it whenever they wanted. And it was like, nah, it's taken away. We're just shutting it down. Which is crazy. That can't, like, that kind of stuff just can't continue. Like, you know?
I mean, the whole idea of just like, by the way, since this was digital, it's just licensed. Like, when did that happen? Like,
yeah. Has it always been like that? I don't. And that's the thing as well. Like, the Crew one, that one's tough.
I think it's because there is some kind of murky waters there. Because if you do buy a game that's still active and still running, you buy it in the state that it's in. Mm-hmm. But they have to update patches and they have to like do,
but like the, you know, service
fixes or even just like add new content, but like things change over time. And then eventually you're just like, well, this isn't what I initially bought. And I liked that previous patch way more. Like, but you have to draw the line somewhere. It's just like, no, they're like, this is a license.
So I
like,
don't mind. Yeah. I don't
agreed
mind
to let us keep
improve the game. And I have no problem with that in terms of, you know, and I think that I'm glad that exists in the world, because we've had a lot of games that, I mean, Cyberpunk, do you know what I mean? You would have got what you paid for with Cyberpunk if that was the attitude to say that you can't change this, you know, in terms of what you,
right,
what you buy it
at. But like, you know, somebody out there would take it that extra step and is like, no, I want Dark Souls version 1.01, where like I could ninja flip through the forest at like 50% equip load, which used to be, I know you have no frame of reference, but that shit was broken. Like that shit.
Yeah.
Really, like, ruined PvP in that game. People loved it. And they had to patch it out. So if, you know, what we buy digitally is our own, could we start complaining about them making those changes? Would they have to make patches and updates opt-in only? Like, it's, I don't know how, there's a lot of red tape that they have to figure out here.
I think for me, the basics would be that it just can't be taken away from you without a...
That would be most important right there.
At the start, I think that's the first and foremost. But it's interesting that the... I mean, I never thought about that. I've always complained about the idea that I don't own, or that we don't own digital media. It can be taken away. But that's a good way to for me now to kind of look at it, to be like, oh, fuck, it is. That's essentially what I'm licensing it, like, you know?
Yeah, wait until they change the button from buy to rent. That's going to fucking scare a lot of people.
Yeah. How long do I get to rent it for? Like, you know, crazy. And something like The Crew, I can understand. Like, if servers need to close down and it's an online-only game, like, I mean, maybe let the people keep it,
game,
and they can, like, just,
a
like...
a game has to sunset at some point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's servers for loads of games that have closed that you can't get online for anymore, which, you know, makes the game fairly useless. And if The Crew is an online-only... But see, this is the thing. Like, online-only in what effect? Is this a game that you have to play online with people, or is this a game that only works when you're connected to the internet? Because if they can take those away, that's crazy.
Playing with people,
I'd hope so, because they're saying they're taking down the servers, but that's the only thing. Is
that was the vision for the game? I think the online only is bullshit too. Like I downloaded Red Dead Redemption 2 recently and found out it's online only for a single player campaign, and
outrageous,
livid.
Yeah,
I was so angry.
Why, and like, that's the thing that I worry about. It's like, why is there a need for that? Like, if you, I mean, it's mad to say that if I wanted to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth again, but someone said to me, "Oh, but this game's online only," I'm like, why? There's nothing online about this game whatsoever. Why is it that I have to have an internet connection to play this?
Yeah, and they're going like, people are taking, or companies are taking steps to like connect them to online and force you to download these like DRMs, which prevents modding of games and shit. And just like, this is, it's God of War. It's like, it's a single player game. Why do you give a fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
you back off. You've already made the money. Like, I mean, people have bought the game and they're like editing it in their own time. They're not reselling it. They're not repurposing it so that they can make money from. Do you know what I mean? If they were selling the mods online for a price and say, that's a different maybe kettle of fish. But if someone's like, hey, I'm out of my game to fucking put Thomas the Tank Engine instead of a dragon in Skyrim. Like, who the fuck cares?
I want to play God of War as Goku. Like, don't stop me.
I've already paid for God of War. You have your money. Now leave me alone with this product I bought. I mean, yeah, it gets murky. But I just love the idea that somebody somewhere here, this governor in California, has said, actually, with the idea of movies, ebooks, documentary type things, applications in every video games, it's like, we need to let consumers know, at least that when it comes to digital media, you license that shit. You do not buy it anymore, which is a crazy thought. But at least we're being told that's the case now.
Yeah, it drives me nuts with, especially like Windows operating systems. The fact that like we can't get under the hood, like that's why I love Linux, is like you're promoted, like they want you to get under the hood and fix stuff, and like it's community developed operating system, whereas Windows just like, nope, you do things our way, and they like lock you
and you
up.
Pay for it every year, you know, if you want certain things or whatever. And
I don't mind. Adobe, have you fucking looked at the prices of like the
Adobe, because Adobe Suite? I did, like, I mean, I was doing video editing for a while and stuff like that, and it just became completely, unless I was owned a business that was making a lot of money editing videos, I am completely priced out of Adobe. Like $30 a month for a thing I might use a couple hours a month. Crazy. And the problem with it is that there are free ones that you can use for sure out there, but like Adobe's done so well at making their stuff look, you know, in terms of it looks so good, it does what it's meant to do really, really well, but charges you a fuck ton of money for it.
If buying isn't owning, pirating isn't stealing.
Absolutely, man. That's a phrase that I think is kind of like, you guys can't complain if you're going to, you know, if you're going to say that we don't, I've had this transaction with you. I have paid you €70 for this video game. I want to take it now and play it. By rights, it should be mine. It's like, no, you're paying €70 for a license. I'm like, nah. That's a world I do not want to enter into. Imagine, like,
Sony announces PlayStation 5 and then just like the next day, just like men in suits knock at your door and just like, break your current PlayStation. Is like, you need to upgrade.
You need to upgrade. I'm sorry. Yeah. You're licensing this. Yeah.
Not allowed to use this one anymore.
Scary world. Well, that's the news for us, Chris. If you guys want to hear more content from me and Chris, we're going to go on a post show where we're going to talk about the Nintendo Switch 2 leaks. We're also going to talk about the fact that Blizzard are working on a StarCraft shooter. And we might even touch upon why or how Assassin's Creed Shadows is getting delayed. If you want to hear that and more, check out patreon.com/thegiftofgaming. We've got a rake of content. For the cost of a coffee a month, it's a bargain of a deal. Check it out. Tell your friends about the podcast. More listeners helps us. It's great. Chris, thanks so much for popping on.
Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.